We're parents, teachers, and educators. And like you, we're passionate about restoring our culture for Christ. This is Veritas Vox, the voice of classical Christian education.
Welcome again to Veritas Vox, the voice of classical Christian education. Today, we have none other than Damian Harhoff with us. Damian, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you here. Folks, you will understand why he gets heralded as a none other than shortly as we get into this. But Damian, tell us, before we get into talking about math in the context of classical education, tell us a little bit about your background.
Okay. In a nutshell, I was born in Cape Town, South Africa, and moved over to America in about 1996. I grew up as a non-Christian, so I was educated and went to school as an unbeliever, and then I became a Christian, came over to America and went to college, and then encountered education as a Christian. So I've seen both sides of how one would interpret or understand or appreciate an education. So now I'm living in Willis, Texas, and we have eight children, some of which have gone through Veritas, some still headed that way. I think our youngest is actually going to have her first year in Veritas this upcoming year. So
wonderful.
Very exciting about that. Yeah.
That is great. Where did you go to college here?
Dallas Baptist University.
Okay, very good, very good. And Willis is near Houston, as I understand.
Yeah, that is north of Houston, yeah. about an hour north of that.
Well, you have been a stalwart, a pillar, a remarkable contributor as a teacher to the online school that we operate, Veritas Scholars Academy, as a math teacher. And I think it's fair to say that Algebra 1 is kind of your sweet spot, isn't it?
I don't know. I've loved all of them. There's the different caliber of students, different maturity and academic levels, and there's definitely advantages of each subject and age group, and I enjoy them all the way up to pre-calculus.
What are you teaching in the current school year?
Algebra 1, Algebra 2, what I call pre-calculus, and then in the summer I do a refresher course for Algebra 1 and then business maths.
Okay, very good. Yeah, you've got quite a number. And how many sections are you teaching this year?
So 9 in the school year and then 4 in the summer.
Unbelievable. You, I hope you have time to sleep.
I have to sleep. People don't like me if I don't sleep, so I make a habit of avoiding that.
One of our teachers once said, "Marlon, I would teach for you for free, but you got to pay me to grade papers. How do you get all the graded papers graded?"
Yes, he teaches by day and grades by night.
Okay.
I would tell you.
Well, that's fun. Tell us, seriously, though, why do you think you are such a popular teacher at VSA? As I understand it, you have most of the sections you're teaching fill up before open registration even begins in around February 1. Why do you think that happens? I don't know that there's any other teacher, certainly no other teacher, that has as many sections that fill up so quickly.
I think of Eric Little when he said, "God made me to run, and when I run, I feel his pleasure." I feel the same way. I feel that God has made me to teach, and when I teach, I feel his pleasure in the same way. It's really the only thing I've ever done since I've graduated from college. You know, I went to college to primarily go into the ministry as a pastor or missionary. I hadn't actually graduated from high school. I actually failed high school because I blew it off because I thought it was completely irrelevant and boring. The interesting thing that my students enjoy is that because the system of education in America is 1 year behind, I was actually able to get into an American college on my 11th grade scores. So I sort of skipped the whole graduate from high school thing.
Oh, wow.
And was able to get a college degree. And I dreaded going into college algebra. It was a required course. But it was then that scales fell from my eyes. I realized God had a whole different plan. He wanted me to become a maths teacher. And it was a curveball. I did not expect that at all. And so right after college, the very first thing I did, I started in an inner city school and thankfully survived. But I think God gave me the personality to connect with students, the humor, to entertain, to sustain their attention, and also a love for mathematics, which I think spills over into the classroom and has the students think, there's something here that I might be missing. Yeah. This apparently is exciting to him.
Tell us about the video that you've got on our website for your teacher video, because I want to encourage people to go see it. It's only about 2 minutes, maybe even less, and it is hilarious.
Okay, so this was, okay, well, first of all, at the time, I hardly even knew how to use a phone to record, and we were sitting there going, how on earth are we going to do this? And thankfully, there was a family in our church that kind of did this. They made movies, and in the providence of the Lord, they said, hey, we can help you do this. And it started off when I was in public school, I realized that, these kids are here, they're completely uninterested, bored. And if I did not find some way to connect with them and have a relationship with them and show them that I care, they were going to tune out. So I thought and thought, and then one year, the first day of school, I grabbed the meter stick, and while they were all sitting in their desks, I walked up and I jumped onto the desk, and everyone was shocked and surprised, and I whipped out the meter stick. And it seemed like the words just came to me because I hadn't really rehearsed this or anything. It was just very spontaneous at the moment. I said, I am so Harhoff, the brave and noble teacher of mathematics, and I slay dragons of ignorance and apathy, and I rescue damsels of potential and promise. And then I jumped off the desk and said, and I believe that my students can and must scale the high walls of obstacle around this castle and conquer the enemy. The drawbridge will not be let down. There is no other way. And I realized that I had them at that point, and the rest of the year was easy. And so that became a tradition to do that every single year. And so on the video, that's how I begin, is I jump on the desk and I give that whole speech.
Well, there's no doubt that kept the imagination of kids in junior high and high school, or middle school and high school. That's incredible. Yes. One of the things that we run into is people who think education is kind of a neutral thing, and we add our beliefs in God, Christianity in general, to that as if education is morally neutral. Now, it's pretty easy to say, well, it matters who's writing the history, and we understand that science, in order for it to be understood to be about God's creation and God's providence, has to recognize the very fact that God created. But in math, someone might try to argue that's not quite the same. It's about numbers, it's about concepts, and there's no difference between math taught Christianly or math taught in a secular and a required secular context, to which you say,
yes, very good. So a couple of verses from the scriptures that come to mind as we seek to understand and embrace education of a Christian worldview is Colossians 1:16 says, for by him all things were created that are in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, thrones, dominions, principalities, powers, all things were created through him and for him. So, yes, the things that we can see that are visible, yes, he made the trees and the mountains and the rivers and, things like that. But even that which is invisible, which would be concepts and ideas. But the point is that all things were made by him and for him. So we have to understand that mathematics exists, was created by him and for his glory. But not only that, then I'll take them to another scripture, which I think is very relevant. Is Psalm 111:2 that says, I'm looking for the right translation, the works of the Lord are great, studied by all who have pleasure in them. So we have the works of the Lord, visible and invisible, and they are studied by those who delight in them. When we put those together, I think we get the foundation of what it means to have a Christian education. Christians who understand that all these things were made by God, and that it is not only our duty, but our delight to study and seek them.
And with math in particular, nothing more basic than the idea of 2 + 2 = 4 today.
Mm.
It equaled 4 yesterday, and it will tomorrow. Nothing more simply demonstrates the fact that God is immutable. He is unchanging.
Indeed.
And that makes him reliable. If he were unpredictable or whimsical, just like we say, well, today 2 + 2 = 3, and tomorrow we might try 5. And it's a real basic concept that the young student can understand and apply to an understanding of the nature and character of God, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I think this is what helps to engage them as well, is to help them understand how mathematics does indeed reflect the very attributes of God and his eternal unchanging truth, because it transcends time and culture as well. When you look at the mathematics is the one thing that cuts through postmodern fog and says there is truth. There is right and wrong, black and white. So
cutting through the postmodern fog, that's a very good way of putting it. Obviously, you teach at not only a school that wants to be known as a distinctively Christian school, but it's also distinctively classical. Maybe talk to us about each stage of math. I realize you don't teach in all three stages, but talk to us about each stage and what it looks like to teach math classically.
Yes. But interestingly enough, when I was, first applying to Veritas and really just encountering that idea of a classical education, I actually immediately first thought this was when you did homeschool while listening to, Beethoven or Bach or something in the background. I didn't quite, I had to actually learn or study about this very interesting model that is tried and true and that we, that we mimic here and do and is very successful. And thankfully, I kind of do teach across all the three triviums, because in Algebra 1, we're laying a foundation of facts and building blocks upon which all of high school mathematics has to rest. And then as we move through to Algebra 2, we're learning, that's the first time that students encounter imaginary numbers. So now they have to begin to think abstractly and think logically and creatively about mathematics. And that's why we kind of put it off after geometry, because there needs to be a little time for some academic growth and maturity. And then in pre-cal, now we begin to articulate this becomes the rhetoric of mathematics, being able to explain back again the things that you see and understand. So I'm actually privileged and grateful to be able to see all three levels in my Algebra 1 through pre-calculus.
Yeah, that's a good point. Can you speak to the value of the difference between the student that has memorized his math tables and that one who has not?
It almost sounds like you have some secret insights into my own family and my... Yes, my own children, who mom just constantly harps on, you've got to get these things memorized. This is such a big hindrance when you don't have those facts. That can come very quickly. Yeah, it's definitely a hindrance and a stumbling block when those basics aren't memorized and quick to acquire, because you have to be able to start there and then move on to new things and then thinking about those things. And if you just don't have them memorized, it really does it frustrates the student themselves. It's kind of, if you did this, you would flourish and enjoy it so much more if you first just had the discipline to get those things solidified.
One of the questions I want to pursue with you is to talk about students who don't consider themselves gifted or might even think of themselves as non-math students. But before I get there, you make me want to ask a question that's related to that. Is it possible that the students who think of themselves as non-math students who are not good at it, actually simply, at least some of them, some significant number maybe, are those who simply didn't do the basics of memorizing the tables of adding, subtracting, multiplying, and dividing?
I would say so.
Do you see that in these students? Are you able to make that connection?
Yes, I do. I see. So in Algebra 1, I primarily try to fill in those holes and gaps because I see them coming in with holes and gaps. There's some things that were left undone, some things that were not given the amount of attention needed, and it does hurt them, and they can feel that, and they, you can see they have that regret. Like, if only I had done this and this and this, it would make it so much easier now. So I definitely do see that.
Yeah. But it's not too late at that point to do a little bit of remediation work, is it?
Definitely not. That actually should be built in, I think, to every curriculum. It's just constantly making sure that you've got those basic building blocks in place. So
tell one of the things I've heard from some very articulate adults from time to time is they don't like math and they don't think it matters that much. Why does math matter for people who don't think it does, or for non-math students?
Yes, this is definitely a challenge. I think one of the things that I think has been a roadblock is a mentality about education, and the fact that we swim in these cultural streams where education is purely vocational. It's some kind of a means to an end. You know, we need to do this so that we can do this, so that we can have this, then eventually we'll graduate, so we can have a job and then make money. And then people wonder, but, you know, I'm not going to do anything with mathematics. In fact, what's real funny, or the irony, is in our own family, you know, the people that are the wealthiest are the ones that failed Algebra 1. And so now I have an extra battle. I've got to convince my children that it's necessary. But you so-and-so didn't do this. And now they're very successful and have an amazing business and are wealthy. So why do I need... Okay, all right, let's... You know, we have to go back to the... You know, the chief end of man is not ultimately to be wealthy, though God might bless you in that way. Chief end of man, thankfully for the catechism, is to, you know, glorify God and enjoy him forever. So... if we go back to, I think, with the original intent in classical circles, education was to, in fact, I have a quote that came from Dr. Michael Eaton when he was talking about education. And I think this is the key. So it comes from, you know, the Greek words ex ducere, the Latin, which became educere. And obviously exodus is a leading out of, you know, like the exodus. And so Dr. Michael Eaton said, education is the leading of an embodied soul out of darkness of ignorance and unbelief into the light of truth and faith, out of the chaos of base and disordered desires into the harmony of noble and well-ordered affections, out of the bondage of injustice and impiety into the freedom of service and love. Wow. Notice none of that has anything to do with a career or a vocation. It's about being, not doing. So I think if education is seen differently as becoming a civilized, rational, you know, cultured, thinking, problem-solving person, then mathematics becomes a very crucial aspect to that because of how mathematics, you know, reflects the order, precision, you know, accuracy of God himself and the complexity of God. So it's about, you know, us loving the Lord with our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and being conformed to Christ, who himself actually not only, you know, created mathematics, but loves mathematics. So I tell my students, but you think about this, okay? We are all being conformed into the image of Christ, who knows and loves mathematics. And I say, sooner or later, whether in this lifetime or the next, you will actually love mathematics. For some, it has already begun. That spark has already become into flame. But for others, it lies dormant. Why? Because we're fallen beings. And so every aspect of us has been affected by the fall. We have fallen intellectually. That's why we don't love mathematics. It's nothing to do with mathematics. It's the fall. It's our sinful nature. But in the process of sanctification, one day we will all see it and love it as it is. So,
okay. What would you envision somebody that didn't love mathematics or struggle with would push back on that? And then how would you address it?
Well, as with everything, the nature of our sinful nature is to resort to that which is easy and convenient and to the path of least resistance. The sanctification is that the whole idea of sanctification is to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. There is a workout. There is effort. There's a running the race. There's a fighting the good fight of faith. There is exertion. We have to overcome that mental block, that mental laziness, that mental apathy, because that all comes from the sinful nature. You know, so it's all part of sanctification.
Interesting. So you have students who come into math who don't think it valuable. They have to do it. So that's why they're there. What do you do to change attitudes like that?
Well, first of all, I think if they can better understand the Christian worldview, the privilege that we have to study the works of God and to see them as the works of God, first of all, to give them a mindset and a framework through which to think, to convince them that this is not just merely a means to an end, but an end in and of itself, and to show them some exciting aspects of mathematics. Sometimes it helps to see, you know, even though this is teaching us how to think and reason and be problem solvers, there are actually people doing this out there right now, and this is what they're doing. And all of us are, you know, all of us will benefit from what mathematics has done in society, inventions and discoveries. You know, we are benefiting from others that have done mathematics.
Absolutely. Do students quickly appreciate that?
I think they really do. I've written an article, a 3-page article or 3-part article on why study mathematics. And it answers the questions, why do I need to know this? And when am I ever going to use this? And it addresses all these things we're talking about. I make that required reading because I feel like they need a new set of lenses. Because if they can see clearly, they'll begin to see different aspects of why they're here, what their chief end is, why it's a privilege to study mathematics, what that actually can do for them, and all of that. And that begins to help them slowly but surely. Sometimes it's a long battle. We've got to undo a lot of negativity. And then slowly transform that into a positive experience. And that's probably the hardest part of teaching. I can teach the concepts, but I realize, you know, I'm taking a student and trying to see them, help them appreciate, you know, studying of mathematics. That is a challenge.
It is a challenge. You deal with all different kinds of children, all different upbringings and perspectives, family backgrounds and that sort of thing, and bringing them in.
Yes.
And really trying to produce lovers of math learning.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Let me ask you another question that has been around. Goodness. My high school graduation gift from my parents was a calculator.
Oh, okay.
And I remember the calculator, and it was over, in 1974, it was over $200.
Oof, yeah.
The most sophisticated function that it did was exponentials and square roots.
Wow,
four okay. Functions and then a couple other things. It was over $200. Today, they're given away at conventions with the marketing information on them for free. At least the functionality, it had a bit more of a sturdy case to it. But calculators have always been, since their introduction, a bit of a question of how do we use them best in education? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So I believe that calculators are good for speed, efficiency, and accuracy. But I'm always saying, you know, our ultimate goal here is not the final answer. Otherwise, we could always use a calculator because that's obviously what they do out there. In the real world is everybody uses computers and calculators. But if our whole goal is to train you how to be a thinking, reasoning, problem-solving human being, which I believe is, you know, in the image of God, then we don't want to use the calculator to bypass that. You know, we don't want to bypass that. Yeah. We want to, you know, learn how to think. We want to learn how to sift through information and organize it logically and think about, okay, what rules and laws in mathematics come to bear on this problem, which ones don't. That's all the process of growing and becoming academically mature and loving the Lord with our mind. So I always say, yes, we can check it with the calculator, but let's not bypass the what's ultimately necessary here. You know, so
yeah, that's wonderful. Well, it's been really great having you on Veritas Vox. Do you have any final words for us?
Final words. Let me think. Well, I would want to say that we ought to, and this is something I would always exhort students, that as Christians, it is a privilege. God has, in his mercy, been pleased to allow us to learn about him and the world that he has made and all the both the visible and invisible aspects of that. And we should attend that banquet with grateful hearts, thankful to him that we have not only the ability, but the opportunity. I come from a third world country where that's not always the case.
Yeah.
Some people just don't have access to a good education. And so we are privileged, and it is with gratitude that we ought to do our education and our school as unto the Lord, realizing that that is what is he is using to conform us into the image of Christ. Yeah. So that's how I want to encourage students.
Yeah, that is very encouraging. Damien Harhoff, Sir Harhoff, thank you for joining us on Veritas Vox. And folks, thank you for joining us on Veritas Vox 2, the voice of classical Christian education. Look forward to seeing you next time.